Good morning.
Good morning.
I could tell you everything you need to not know about a doctoral degree at the University of Florida someday. Trust me. After 12 years and perseverance, we've had something happen. What we're trying to do today, obviously, is to get this to start. It knows what I'm going to say, so it's trying its best to make sure it does. There we go. Oh, let's get past that. We're going to talk about marriage. We always like to start on a light side, but how many of you can relate to that? You know, when you stop and really think about it, some of us have been married so long, we begin to take an awful lot of stuff for granted, don't we? But I looked at that and I said, yeah, I can relate to that. This morning during the Bible study, we presented that there are six items that if we get them into your relationship, into your marriage, I can pretty well guarantee you that you will have a happy marriage. You know, I've been doing marriage counseling in one form or another for almost 40 years. I started out, as most of us as preachers started out, up in Tennessee when I was going to school and preaching up there. I had... Am I turned on? That's probably the best thing I've said all day. You know? But when you think about... Now, I forgot where I was. You have to back it up and take it over. I've been doing counseling in one form or another for almost 40 years. Started out, as most preachers do, when you're preaching, you spend a lot of time working with individuals and couples. And then when we went to the Bible school, a lot of the kids would come to me, and I had a chance to. And I was also preaching in Ocala, so I did a lot of counseling with individuals, couples, and families there. And then when I started preaching at Mount Dora, I did the same thing. And I would say anybody who's done any preaching has spent an awful lot of time talking to individuals and couples and families, trying to help them to walk through the minefield. And it's literally a minefield sometimes, just to get the marriage where it needs to be. And this morning I pointed out a few facts. Fact number one is there's 6.5 billion of us on the face of this planet. Approximately 53% to 54% of those people are married. And when you stop and think about how many of that percentage are illiterate, obviously, it doesn't take a doctoral degree in rocket science in order to become happily married. But the world we live in does everything it can to rob us of happy marriages. Would you agree? And this morning we pointed out where all the negative influences are coming from in the world today that would tear us down and destroy our marriages. We mentioned that 2.5 out of every 5 marriages will end in divorce. Every one of us in this room knows somebody who is a product of a divorce. Husbands or wives or friends or fellow associates. Maybe some of you have even been affected directly by a divorce. And so we recognize that divorce is very prevalent within the United States. It has become so easy, you don't even have to go before a judge anymore to get divorced. Okay, that has gone by the wayside. We do have some cases where it goes before a judge, but not very many. In any one week, I will see on an average, and when I see about 30 clients a week, at least half of those will be couples in trouble, wanting to work on their marriage. There are 6 items, and we pointed these out, and I'm going to go through them very quickly here, and then we're going to talk about one of those items this morning. And tonight we're going to talk about another, so you've got to come back for another one. This is an 8-hour workshop. Nobody got up and ran for the exit. Cool. We just won't give you all 8 hours of it today. If you want the rest of it, we'll just have to come back and do the rest of it. But number one on the list was appreciation expressed. We are a nation of critical thinkers. We believe our role is to correct everybody else. We believe it's our role to tell our spouses where they're falling down and what they're doing wrong. Okay? What we have to realize is Jesus expects us to also show appreciation. Why are we with this person? What is there about them that God would want to have in their life, in his life? And are we able to even look for that and find it and acknowledge it from time to time? Because we all need to know somehow, somewhere, where we measure up. Second one is adequate and appropriate communication. We're a nation of non-communicators. Every war that's ever been fought had to eventually come to the peace tables in order for that war to stop. Have you noticed that? So So at some point, we also have to learn how to communicate appropriately, in other words, about the right things, and adequately enough of it, if we're ever going to resolve issues. Third item that we have on that list is time invested together. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Time invested together. More and more couples spend less and less time together. And if you start having troubles, guess what? You avoid it altogether. If you're not taking time together, what's the chance you're going to resolve any issue? If you're not going to resolve any problem. Fourth item on the list, common religious beliefs. We realize that when we believe that there's something bigger and better than the both of us, there's a greater likelihood we will defer to that judgment and we'll work on something. Fifth item, a commitment to the relationship, but not necessarily a commitment to each other. And that's what we're going to talk about here in just a few minutes. That one kind of blew my mind. And I always thought, unless you're committed to the person, that somehow nothing ever happens. And we're going to find out that that isn't necessarily true. And the fifth item, and the one I kind of like, sense of humor. Now, that doesn't mean you need to laugh at your spouse. Laugh with them, perhaps, but not necessarily laugh at them. Sense of humor means sense of perspective. Recognizing in the scheme of everything that might happen in the world, where does this particular issue fall? And learning how to put it in that perspective. Okay? When we talk about commitment, I always like to go to the dictionary first and find out, what in the world does that mean? You know, commitment means, I keep wanting to turn up there. Let me look at the screen here. A pledge or a promise, an agreement pertaining to being bound, uncompromising. Now, we think about Jesus. Was Jesus committed to what God wanted him to do? Now, did he really want to die? How do you know Jesus did not want to die? Yeah, you only have to go to the Garden of Gethsemane, don't you? Before you realize that he did not want to die. But he recognized his Father had a plan. And he was willing to follow the plan. This morning we also pointed out that God has a plan for marriage. He has a plan. If we work his plan, guess what we end up with? His product. Right? Okay. Relationship is defined as a connection. The condition of belonging to the same family. The state or condition that exists between people or groups that deal with one another. A relationship. Now, when we think about committing to relationship, and this particular research said committing to the relationship but not to each other, we had to come up to commitments to people are based on... If he drops it, I wasn't near it. Thank you. Actually, with my glasses, you need to put it back there on the back. Commitments to people are based on feelings. When you commit to a human being, you're going to commit based on how you feel about them at any one time. And problem with feelings, they're always changing, aren't they? Now think about this for just a minute. Let's suppose you are ecstatically happily married to your spouse. Okay, pretend. Okay, you're ecstatically happily married to your spouse. So much that when you're sitting across the table from them, the hearts are floating through the air, and your rose petals are floating through the air. You know the comic book rendition of love. And you decide that you're going to get up, walk around that table, and plant the wettest, sloppiest kiss on that person you love that you've ever done. You get up and you walk around and you trip over their shoes. Yeah, you know the rest of the story, don't you? Your feelings change halfway to the floor, don't they? All of a sudden, that love, those rose petals floating through the air, and those little hearts popping, all disappeared in an instant, didn't they? And now all you want to do is tell them about how sloppy they are, and how many times have I told you to not put your shoes there, and all those things. What happened to the feeling? You see, feelings as human beings are controlled by what we're thinking about at the moment. And unfortunately, if what we're thinking about is negative, what feelings do we have? Negative feelings. If I'm thinking positive, what feelings do I have? You see how easy it is to control how you feel? So if everything we're going through is in a state of flux and I'm committed to the person based on how I feel, my feelings are going to control the depth or the strength of that commitment. Does that make sense? Okay. However, when you commit to an institution, you commit based upon what you believe about that institution. Now, I'm going to go out on a limb, but I think I know what the answer is going to be. How many of you in here love the United States of America? If you don't raise your hand, I got cards. All right, we all love America. All right, now raise your hand if you believe every single thing the United States government has ever done. Raise your hand. Okay. You see what I'm saying? But we believe in this country. We're not going to fight against this country. We're not going to try to destroy this country because we believe in what it can do, right? We believe in what it stands for. We believe in what it means. We may not always like what our leadership does. Trust me, I don't like what our leadership does on a regular basis, especially our legislature and our Supreme Court and many other people. But the bottom line is, as long as I am committed to the United States, I have a chance to change that, don't I? And so that becomes an important part of committing to the organization. Thoughts are usually based on facts, not based just upon feelings. We're able to think it through, and therefore they're less prone to fluctuate. Commitments to institutions are less likely to change based upon what happens in the moment. If we don't like a decision that our president makes or our Congress makes, we're less likely to pack our bags and move to Canada or Mexico or some other country because of that 1, 2, 3, 4, or 150,000 different decisions. Because we still believe in what the institution stands for. Make sense? Okay. Why should I commit to a relationship, though? What's the whole purpose? Well, first of all, it is part of God's plan. Do you remember all the way back in the very beginning when God made man and he made woman? He made this statement in Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. Actually, Adam makes this statement, but this was directed by God. For this reason, man shall leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, and they shall become, what? One flesh. That's a commitment. That's a joining. Now, I have a whole theory. We're called Shiresisms. Those of you who have been in my classes remember Shiresisms. They don't cost you anything extra. They may cost you a lot, but they won't cost you any money. But when you think about committing this way, when you think about one flesh, why in the world did God choose to do that? I've always wondered about that. You know, when God made man, he said it's not good for him to be alone, right? Now, we sometimes erroneously have thought that meant that Adam was lonely. Lonely is a condition of relationship. He had nothing to compare it to. He had the perfect relationship with God. So he wasn't missing somebody, was he? No. God recognized that that relationship was not complete. Now, think about it for just a minute. And bear with me. So please don't go to sleep after this next statement because you're going to think I'm a lunatic. You may think that anyway. Consider this. Only a God can make something just like him and yet totally different from him. Remember? God made man in his image. So we're like God, but we're also totally different from God, aren't we? Now, if you can think about God having a dilemma, he's got a dilemma. How can I get this human being that I've made to understand me and relate to me? God says, I got an idea. I'm going to make something just like him and yet totally different from him. I'm going to put them together and give them a lifetime to figure it out. If they can figure it out, then they'll learn how to relate to me. Okay, that's Shiresism. But think about it for just a minute. When God looks at us, he wants a relationship with us. Would you agree? That's what he wants. And so he made us to have a relationship with him, and he wants us to know how to do that. What better way than that than put us together with someone else and give us the opportunity to figure it out in life? Not easy, is it? Not easy at all. And so God gives us that opportunity. One flesh illustration. Okay. I'm one of those that has to visualize things. Refreshments. Okay, not really. What I have here is a bottle. This is vegetable oil. Would you say that vegetable oil has a pretty distinct personality? If you get a mouthful of vegetable oil, will you know what you got? Okay. Now, vegetable oil is very, very useful. I mean, you can cook with it, right? You can use it. According to Heloise, I don't know if I'd want to test this or not, but a little bit on a Q-tip on the hinges of your doors and your cabinets is a great lubricant. Okay? So vegetable oil is very distinct. Down here is vinegar. Would you also say that vinegar has a very, very, very strong personality? You get a mouthful of that, will you not know exactly what you got? But it's also very, very useful. You can pickle things with it. Heloise says you can clean with it. And guess what? You get them both together sometimes, guess what you got? Salad dressing, yeah. And one of the neat things about that is when you have two distinct personalities, mixing it up only periodically, they're going to be prone to do one thing. What's happening to that bottle? They're prone to separate. Unfortunately, that's a modern American marriage. Because we have two individuals stressing their individuality, stressing their own personality, getting together once in a while saying how great and wonderful everything is, but when things start going rough, they're going to go with their own personalities. They're going to go with what they want, the way they want it, the way they think they need it, and they won't think about the other side at all. Are you following that illustration so far? I need an assistant. Well, let me get a young person. I've waited all my life to say that to Cletus. You see, he used to be my boss. Then I married one. Young man, how about you? Could you come up here just a minute? You don't mind, do you? Come on up. One of you. Hey, we're going to be here all night. Either one of you. Come on up. Come on up. I promise it won't hurt much. You do have health insurance, right? Okay, just want to make sure. In this bottle, I have pixie sticks. Do y'all know what a pixie stick is? You know what a pixie stick is? You really do. You're old. These are pixie sticks. That's kind of a sweetened candy that you can get in a straw, you know. And you open that up, and you've got a pretty good, solid candy. You know, and when you're really hungry for something, and you're really wanting a kind of a good sugar rush, you can't get anything better than that, you know? In this bottle, I have good, cold, clean water. And if you're out in the yard working, and you have a need, and you're very, very thirsty, guess what? You can't get anything better than good, cold, clear water. Would you agree? Do this. There you go. This is easy. Fun, too, isn't it? You're going to be a preacher someday. That's my prediction. Okay? And a husband. Not necessarily in that order. Okay? But you here you have good, clean water. Now, all of us know the distinct personality of this. If you've ever had these, you know what that is, right? Well, I want to show you something. We're going to have a chemical reaction here. Are those clothes really good? If you will hold that right there like that, keep that in there pretty good and tight. If it bubbles over, explodes, or anything like that, I wasn't near him. Okay, well, watch what happens here as we pour this in here slowly. Now hold it there just a second. You're waiting for the explosion, aren't you? It's coming now. Thank you very much. Wasn't that neat? Okay. What do I have now? I have Kool-Aid. Did you notice that just as soon as the water started hitting that, what happened? It started changing into Kool-Aid immediately. Now, I can almost guarantee you, because I had a bottle like this I did another church about 5 years ago. It's been sitting in my office. I finally had to pour it out because after a while it does get a little old. But I want you to notice something. When water decided it no longer wanted to be water, and Pixie Six decided it didn't want to be Pixie Stick anymore, and they got together, you got Kool-Aid. I want to tell you something. That won't separate. Because we don't have a Pixie Stick anymore. We don't have water anymore. We got Kool-Aid. That's a marriage. That's what God wants us to have. Not the first one. The word marriage actually comes from metallurgy. Y'all know what metallurgy is? You've all studied in school. Okay, you haven't studied in school, but you know what it is. Metallurgy is where they learn that you can take one metal and another metal, and under extreme situations, you can literally meld those two together, and you end up with something completely better than what you had before. Like tin and copper, when melted together, what's it create? Bronze. I didn't know it was bronze or brass. So I'm glad you answered that. Or when you put carbon in with iron under extreme heat and oxygen, you end up with steel. Or when hydrogen and oxygen come together, you end up with water. And you realize it takes something extreme to drive them apart? You realize once you've put tin and copper together, you'll never have tin and copper again from that same element, no matter how much heat you put to it, no matter how pressure you put on it. It's not going to happen. That's what God expects for a marriage. You see, if we get married and become one flesh, like God asks us to be, you can't drive it apart. It takes something of extreme nature outside the relationship to drive it apart. Are y'all following what I'm saying? That's what God expects. That's what God expects. And yet, in our lives, in our time, we have a tendency to emphasize the first one. Once we're committed, once we've done that, separation requires something so outside the ordinary, something so outside of either one of us to drive it apart. Remember, total commitment, however, is not possible. Even Jesus was disappointed with his disciples from time to time, wasn't he? Remember how many times Jesus made the statement, "Oh, how long do I have to put up with you, oh, you of little faith?" You remember when he was in the boat, asleep, worn out, sleeping in the front of the boat, or in the back of the boat, I don't know the ends of the boat, but he was in the boat, asleep, and a great storm came up, and his disciples became so afraid that they came and listened to what they said to him as they shook him, rudely awakened him, "Don't you care that we perish?" And we're told Jesus got up, went to the bow of the boat, and he rebuked the wind and the waves, and they became still. And it says his disciples were amazed. But he said to them, "How long do I have to put up with you, O you of little faith?" You see, Jesus, perfection, also got disappointed. Trust me, if you're married to someone, you're going to be vastly disappointed a lot. But you know, if we're melded together as one, what will happen to the disappointment? How did Jesus handle his disappointment with his disciples? Even when he needed them the most, just before he went to the cross, where were all of his apostles? They were hiding. They ran. They denied him. One betrayed him. And only one stayed with him all the way to the foot of the cross. Did Jesus have a reason to be disappointed? Heartbroken? Torn apart? And yet, loved them all. What are the ingredients of a true commitment to a relationship? There are several things I want us to look at. Respect is number one. Respect is taught, it's modeled, and it's practiced. You cannot have respect for everybody in the family unless you have respect for everybody in the family. It's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Respect is something that is given. It cannot be earned. And you say, "Wait a minute, that sounds totally different than everything I've ever been taught." Well, that's why you were taught wrong. When you stop and think about it, respect is a gift I give to someone, isn't it? If I don't know you, but I want to give you a gift, it's my gift to give, not yours to earn. You can't earn this gift from me. Salvation, is it a gift or is it something God owes us? It's a gift, okay? So God has established several things that are very, very much like that in our relationships with each other. Respect is something I choose to give to you based upon my thoughts, not your deeds. Scripture implies the importance of this mutual respect. And here are some passages. We're not going to have time to read all this, but I hope you'll write these down and you'll study them. But Colossians chapter 3, 18 through 21 and 23 through 25, as well as Ephesians chapter 5, verses 21 through 27. God emphasizes the importance of respect, mutual respect, within a relationship. Now, that means, do we really deserve God's respect? But He respects us. And He says He respects us not as individuals, but collectively. That's why it says He's not a respecter of persons. He shows us honor and trust. Trust is the next item, which is a very, very important item. Trust is also given. It cannot be earned. Now, this is one of the problems a lot of times young people run into. You do something wrong. You get in trouble for it. And then years later, the parents keep reminding you of what you did 10 years ago. Trust can only be earned, cannot be earned, it can only be given, or it can be lost. All of us at one time or another have lost trust. Have you not? Somewhere along the line, somebody doesn't trust you. Would you agree? So how do you get trust back? Well, you can't. Let me kind of give you an example here. I'm going to move through this because I realize suddenly the time, get that clock. Got to get, anyway. Mutual trust obviously is going to make commitment a whole lot easier. If you trust each other, being committed to one another is a whole lot easier to do. Does that make sense? Now I want to give you an illustration of trust. Y'all are familiar with rope bridges? Any of you ever been up to Rock City? And you got that swinging bridge? Any of you actually walk across it? I have cards. Call. Make an appointment. There's a lot of things I will not do. I will not jump out of an airplane with a perfectly good bed sheet strapped to my back. I am not going to do that. Okay? And walking across one of these bridges that do this thing, I have a great deal of difficulty. I only have one eye. I'm blind in one eye, so I have no depth perception. So I know there's an edge somewhere. I don't want to find it by accident. But let's suppose we have a rope bridge stretched from that corner all the way to that corner over there. One swinging rope bridge. Down here, 1,000 feet below that bridge, is a raging rapids. Got the picture? You're over here, you want to get over there. What can the bridge do to prove you can walk across it? So can the bridge do anything to prove it'll hold your weight? So what can we do? You said test it. You said trust it. So how would you test it? Oh, okay, so what I'm going to do is, all right, here we go. Adequate enough? You're bigger than me, maybe. Oh, hey. So I'll tell you what. I'll send him across. He gets over there. He may have weakened it. Are you getting the idea? That bridge can't do anything to prove it can be trusted. Nothing. Nothing. Once you've lost trust, you can't do anything to prove you're trustworthy. That's why it has to be a gift by the other person. Now, here's the key I tell most couples. If you're over here and you want to get over there, you have to want to be over there more than you fear getting there. Did you follow that? You have to want to be over there more than you fear the process of getting there. Now, I tell couples, how bad do you want to be married? It's an honest question. It's an easy question. How bad? Well, pretty bad. Are you wanting to be married bad enough that you'll do anything I tell you to do that would guarantee you to have a successful marriage? Here's a test I give. So if any of you ever end up in my office, it's a test. You need to pass the test. So I'll ask the couples, will you do anything and everything I tell you to do if I can guarantee you a successful marriage? If they immediately say yes, we can work with them. If they say, that depends, then what I know is at that moment they're not willing to walk across the bridge yet, are they? They may eventually. We may say something or do something that might cause them to recognize that, But at some point, we have to want God's product, happy marriage, more than we fear what's going to happen in order to get it. Does that make sense? To me, that's common sense. But you see, a lot of times in this world in which we live, it's too hard. It's too tough. And you want to know something? You're right. In many cases, it is. In many cases, the issues and the problems become so overwhelming that we're beat down. We're practically destroyed. But you want to know something? God has never, ever asked us to do something that we can't do. Right? We have to have acceptance if we're going to have total commitment. Shoulds and musts seldom make do's and does. Okay, that's not a very good English statement, but I'm not an English teacher. Think about it. Shoulds and musts seldom make for do and does. Well, he should, she should, they must, they oughta, they this, they that. Seldom accomplishes the end product. How many times have you said, I'm going to try to do something? Well, we're going to give you another test. We're going to see how well you do with this. Y'all have a song book in front of you where you can reach it? All right, don't pull it out. I'm not going to lead singing. You don't have to worry. Nobody needs to run for the exits yet. Okay? I want you to do exactly what I ask you to do. Don't do anything more. Don't do anything less. Do exactly what I ask you to do. Is that pretty clear? Okay. Just try to pick up that songbook. You notice I don't hear a whole lot of songbooks sliding out of the back of the pew. You know why? You can't try to do anything. It's not humanly possible. It's not going to happen. Your brain will stop you short of success just as soon as you say, I'm going to try to do something. As a coach, how many times did you tell the players, I want you to go out there and try to win the game? You told them to go out there and win it, even when they didn't think they could. That's also why he's got a lot of wins. Do you realize in the Bible, the word try is found 5 times. Genesis to Revelation. 3 of those are in relationship to a legal process, to try somebody in a court of law. 2 of them are referenced to Satan. Can you imagine what it would be like if God said, I tell you what, I want you to live your life like me. I want you to be as perfect as I am perfect. I want you to treat each other with kindness and love. I want you to do these things and be this way because in the end, I'm going to try to save you. Doesn't that sound foreign? Not going to happen. Acceptance has to be something that we're willing to do. All the emphasis on the past will never make the present or future any brighter. Paul made that discovery. Those things which are in the past I count as refuse. For what reason? That I might gain a higher calling. Until I get rid of some of the things in the past, guess what? Nothing gets better. Nothing gets better. Does that make sense? If all I can live on is what's been there in the past, and if the past was so horrible, why in the world would I want to continue to perpetuate it in the present? So we have to have some kind of acceptance. Affirmation needs to be in place. Everyone in the family needs to know what they have done right. Oh yeah, we need to remind them what they've done wrong. We need to remind them the things that need to be improved. But we also need to do and know what was right. That's what Jesus did with the churches of Asia in the book of Revelation. He had to let them know, I know what your works. I know what you have done. However, there are some other things that need to be improved. Everyone needs to hear, I care and you count. If people don't believe they're cared about and they don't believe that they count, then what's the use of doing anything? Especially in a marriage. There needs to be unselfishness. Put others in the family above yourself at times. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. Remember, when we emphasize ourselves, we end up with vinegar and oil. When we emphasize the others, we end up with Kool-Aid. We end up with something bigger and better than ourselves. That's what Jesus' principle was in Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Not as they do unto you. Not as they deserve. But as you would have them treat you. There needs to be understanding. Requires adequate and appropriate communication. That's one of those areas that we have in the workshop that we do. We need to understand, and so we have to communicate. If we're not communicating, there will be no understanding. It's not possible to understand something that's never been communicated. It also requires a hope for the best. Do you realize most of us are familiar with 1 Corinthians 13, aren't we? It's called the love chapter. And if you remember in that list, it says, love bears all things, believes all things, doesn't take account of evil, hopes, right? Remember all those things? Do you realize in order to endure something, there has to be something to endure? That if you're not going to take account of evil, there has to be evil that could have been taken account of? To bear all things, there had to be things that had to be born. Do you realize that? So when you look at 1 Corinthians 13, it's not painting the perfect picture of an easy love. It's talking about something that you have to make a choice to do, a decision. Quite like Jesus having to make the decision to go to the cross. Not easy, but doable. There are several biblical admonitions, and we're going to close with this. All of these passages deal with that whole idea of committing one to another. I've got an assignment here, and I'm going to have Bert or somebody, if you pass those out. He's trying to say, pass what out? I want every husband and every wife to get one of these. These are not for the children yet. Sorry, guys, gals. You come back in a few years, and then you'll get them. But this is a little pledge statement. It's self-explanatory. It asks you to make a pledge to your spouse. I don't want you to lie about it. If you cannot honestly put your name and sign that, don't do it. I don't want to set anybody up to lie. I don't want to set anybody up to fail. But I want you to think about what it means to commit. And I want you to think about your spouse. And I want you to see whether or not you can make that kind of a commitment. If you can, great. What I would ask you to do is put your name in there, sign it, give it to them as a present, and then live by it. Make sure that it actually works. Because if you do, and if you pull it off, you're going to have a happy marriage. Give them a chance to pass those out there. I realize that we also have a marriage with Jesus. Remember, the church is His bride. There may be someone here right now who have not yet become part of that marriage. Jesus wants you. He came looking for you. He loves you. He wants you to be part of His bride. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, there's absolutely no reason why you can't be part of that bride. Okay, that's a given. Jesus did all the groundwork. He set it in motion. Then all He would ask you to do is turn away from the world and everything it has, confess your belief in Me, and be buried in baptism with Me. That amalgamation, okay? That pulling together, that blending, so that we can become one. That's all Jesus asks. You can do that through the waters of baptism. If you've strayed from Him or walked away from Him, He's still waiting for you. He didn't leave. He's there for you. He wants you back. He loves you. You're His bride. And so He encourages you to come back. Or if you need the prayers of this congregation, if you've got a problem in a marriage, I've got cards, I've got brochures. And sometime today, get one, give us a call. You know, our job, and we take it very seriously at my office, is to help people. Because we believe that's what God wants us to do. It's been my ministry, it's been my mission to help as many people as we possibly can. I wish I could tell you we are successful 100% of the time. That's not the case. But we do what we can. Through God's help, you will be successful. You follow His plan, I will guarantee you, you will end up with His product. Whatever your needs are, we'd like to encourage you to come to Him while we stand and sing the song which was selected.